Item five, presentation of total compensation study for all CSERA staff. Doug Johnson, there's Doug. Good morning, sir.
Good morning. Get me up here?
We'll get you all set up here and turn there. Yeah. Wherever you're comfortable, podium's fine. Great.
Okay.
I'll be at the podium then. Well, good morning. Thank you for having me. What I wanted to do was, I know you've got a long report. I think it's a 100-page report that you have in front of you, and I don't know how many of you have read every single page, but there's a lot of detail in there. So I wanted to focus on kind of the broader macro kind of aspect of this, and if you're interested in getting into details, we can handle that kind of at the end here. So what we were here hired to do was to do a compensation survey for this organization. And the reason that these surveys are done is because you are in business for a variety of services, and a key part of that is the labor that you have in the organization. So recruiting employees, recruiting quality employees is important, and retaining quality employees is important. You can kind of go along doing increases or not doing increases kind of from the seat of your pants. And if you do it that way, sometimes what happens is you find that certain skill sets become short in the marketplace. The economy cooks up. People leave. You have difficulty recruiting. The whole idea of doing a market survey is it gives you the ability to look at data and to be very deliberate in positioning your organization with respect to compensation and benefits. So it's a way of looking, kind of reading the tea leaves of what's happening in the marketplace, not being on your back foot when it comes to making compensation decisions. The process that we use in our survey is very extensive. We're contacting every organization. We're getting as much background documentation as we can, job descriptions, salary schedules, benefit summaries, memorandums of understanding. And then we're doing a very detailed analysis of comparing what the job is here in this organization, what the comparable job in the other organization is, and then ultimately determining a match. And one indication you can see of that in your report is when you get to data sheets, we sometimes have footnotes on some of those pages. And oftentimes that's a clarification either in terms of a reporting relationship. And sometimes what it is we're actually listing a job that is the job that functionally may have some of those duties, but for whatever reason is not comparable. And it's typically going to be a situation where either the job is a much higher level of responsibility, it has more things that it's responsible for. So I think accounting manager is a survey job in there, and in some cases, or in many cases, the function that we're trying to match isn't a division head. It ends up being something that's much higher in these organizations. Yes?
Were you able to determine in the survey process where you didn't have a match in a position, or it didn't appear that one was even in existence, if that position might be outsourced by the surveyed entity? That is, if they had a full-time contract,
correct,
service in
for
place,
example, information technology might be contracted.
I saw it even in the lawyering area. So,
right,
did your survey get behind that and determine if those were outsourced?
We did. It's not documented in the report, but we do have that information. So we ask ourselves the same question: well, they have to have the service who's providing it, and find out that it's a contract or predominantly through a contract. Yes.
Yeah, I'm just saying if we're going to compare, I think that's relevant, right? I mean, if someone else is incurring a cost for IT or lawyering or whatever,
it's
no less a cost that's comparable to what we bear, whether internally or externally, right?
Right, except that our purpose here is to focus on employees and job titles and classifications here versus there. So if they choose to outsource as a business model for whatever reason, whether it's because it's cost effective or because they don't have the in-house expertise or because of the size of the entity, they can't do that in-house, that would be more of an organizational decision. So I don't disagree that it's relevant information to know in terms of understanding why they don't have a job match, but we're not going to secondarily chase down what the cost is of that contract, whether or not that's in any way a higher or lower or more efficient cost. That would be more of an organizational analysis.
Well, I hear you, but if you're making widgets and you have two choices, I can have employee who makes widgets, or I can contract it out to the widget company and get widgets.
Right.
I want to compare that cost, because if we're using this to compare costs to other, other entities, I'm not sure what we're comparing if we don't really get behind the number and look at what was outsourced. I mean, it does seem relevant to me, not from an organizational standpoint, from what it costs to deliver the service standpoint. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, and that's just simply not something that would be in the scope of this type of survey to do that type of a detailed review.
Oh, you did. It seemed like you did a lot of work. I did read it. So.
Right. I think it just becomes, I've done those kinds of studies. So when we're trying to do an outsourcing model versus internal, that's a very detailed analysis that gets into hours work, the type of expertise. Most organizations are end up in some service areas, they have make a decision predominantly whether it's in-house or externally, but there's always some level of hybrid. So we've done those types of studies, but that's not part of what this project was.
Okay, thanks.
So in any event, we have results of our survey that are documented in a series of data sheets that are appendices in the report. So a lot of that detail in terms of those decisions, what job title we found was a match, what their salary structure is. We did some correlations of size of entities. And part of the reason that we did that is if a job was highly correlated with the size of the entity, we wanted to take a second look at the data. And in many cases, we dropped that data from our analysis. And a good example is when you're looking at a CFO, a high-level position, size and scope of staff, budget, resources, et cetera, end up having a very significant impact on what these positions are paid. So with a PERS or a CalSTRS or some entity that's huge, it makes sense to drop those data points out because you don't have that same scope and structure. When we're looking at an accountant, a four-year degree, several years of experience, somebody that's doing that kind of professional level work that's not supervisory, the difference between an accountant here and CalPERS, their duties are going to be much the same. So the size of the entity in those instances isn't going to be something that takes that data point away. So we wanted to make sure we looked at that, and that's why you see the correlations in the data sheets. So the market that we survey, just as a setup, we look at a variety of characteristics. There's no perfect market, meaning we could sit around a table and 10 of us come up with variations of what we consider to be an ideal source of data. There may be somebody that says, well, let's just buy it from the private sector and just use that data source. Since you're a public entity, it makes sense to look at public entities that have a similar type of business model and certainly have similar jobs. So we look at your nature of services. We look at what you've surveyed historically to see if there's any practice there. We would look at geographic proximity. So ideally, you can look starting here and maybe draw another 45 miles, 60 mile radius and see, do you have other retirement association entities that you compete with that are in that region? The problem with retirement agencies is that when you start looking at the size and scope of services, there's a lot of variability and certainly not as many entities since they're typically county-based or regionally based that's broader than that. So we start looking at employer size, economic similarity, and we end up having a broader market. So in this case, it was essentially a statewide market. And what we tried to do was to control for, and we'll get to this later, cost of living differences and size differences, but to be able to balance these factors. So we have a large market because we wanted to be able to access as much data as possible and have the best benefit of finding matches within these organizations. And here's the list. We used assets and membership as an indicator of size. We also have, behind the scenes, we also looked at number of employees just to get a sense for that. But these two measures tend to be very common. We also use an index published by a company called the Economic Research Institute, and it simply is a cost of living index. So if you want to talk about the cost of living differences between a Concord, a Martinez, a San Francisco, Oakland, Sacramento, this index will do that. It's published quarterly. It's used by Fortune 500 companies. It relies on a combination of BLS, federal government data, and data that they collect in their survey analysis. And it's the classic basket of goods, insurances, fuel costs, health insurance costs, housing costs. All those aspects are rolled into that index. So what it means, if you look at Contra Costa County at the top line there, what we're looking at is the employment base. So we would be looking at Concord as our employment base, where you're located, not where people live. We realize that people commute from different distances, but we look at your employment center, and if you're going to compare to Alameda County, what that 122 means is that their cost of living is 22% higher than your cost of living here. And if you look at City and County of San Francisco, in San Francisco, their cost is 80% higher. That doesn't give us the full picture of what the market is. That simply tells us what the costs are. And another index that they publish is what's called a wage index. And what that does is look at wages on average in one community versus another. So when you look at that, and this shouldn't be a surprise to most of us, wages don't match cost of living, meaning that if you choose to live in San Francisco and work in San Francisco, you're going to have a wage, as shown here, that's 8.6% higher, but your cost of living is going to be 80% higher. So you're making choices in terms of, I don't want to commute, I want to live in the city, I want the culture, whatever, but you're not going to get a bang for bang, you know, dollar for dollar difference in terms of that cost of living. So we like to look at both, and we're only using this as a guide for economic similarity or difference. And what we like to see, if we average it all out on the bottom or use the median in this case, we want to see something that's plus or minus 5% ideally. So you can see we're close to that. We're a little bit on either end, and that's more an indication, again, of the variety of market. You can see on the wage side, we're actually low by, you know, so 94.7%. We're just over 5% below, and on the cost of living, we're the reverse, just slightly above on cost of living. So that gives us a balance in terms of, yes, these are agencies that are geographically diverse. We're going down to San Diego, Fresno, Kern County, but we overall have some balance in these numbers. And later on, we will actually do an analysis to quantify out these cost of living differences in our data points. So these are the agencies. This is the footprint of the survey that we conducted in terms of what agencies we contacted. Again, just as a reminder, we did not necessarily use data points for every job in every agency. Again, we're very sensitive to the fact that STRS and CalPERS, because of their size, there's going to be some jobs that just aren't a good match here.
You are going to cover why Alameda's 22% higher?
I'm not, because that's Economic Research Institute's index that shows that. It could be utility taxes, housing costs. So that's why we rely on a third-party index. They have a bunch of PhDs, and this is a court-tested index, by the way. So it's used in court cases. I've used it in expert witness, arbitration types of cases. It's a very credible index. I realize that we can sit around the table and look at these numbers and scratch our head as to why it's 22% higher, but they have a very detailed analysis and, as I said, a bunch of PhDs that produce that index. It's been around for, gosh, almost 30 years. I've been using it in my business for 25 years.
But it's also interesting to look at the wages. They're pretty comparable around the Bay Area.
Correct. And that's not untypical, because what a wage index does, obviously, is what you're not seeing behind that is people making choices to live elsewhere and commute.
No, I know. But
yeah.
And I'm also looking at it from a county employer perspective, too. When you hear that we have retention problems, and I'm appreciative you don't have Santa Clara in there, because Santa Clara always gets thrown up to us, and they have a whole different tax base. But, you know, you look at the other Bay Area counties, and the wage index is pretty comparable, other than San Francisco, but even so, that's not too far off.
And also just emphasize, this wage index is based on all employers. It's their data. It's not based on our survey. It's not based on public sector employers specifically. It's a very large composite of private and public sector. So I just wanted to make a few comments about private sector data. I am agnostic when it comes to using private sector data. It can be beneficial to look at depending on your industry, but there are some issues and challenges associated with it. One is that we have to buy it. Now, we can get this data from the same company that does these indexes, and we do, and it's updated quarterly, and they have a database of over 4,000 jobs. So it's as credible a data point as you can get, but I can't audit it. I can't dig down and find out are the qualifications the same, is the application of that knowledge the same. I can't even though they'll regionalize it to this area, I can't break it any further than that. So it's a source of information that can be very relevant, but it's not going to have the same tangible clarity and comparability that the other data does. And the other thing I've learned in doing this for 25 years is that when you look at a public pay plan in any entity, whether it's a city, county, or electric utility, or a school district, their pay level from the top employee, the CEO level position, to the bottom is a much narrower band than if you look at a comparably sized private sector organization. So that means that if we're going to focus on, I don't know if this has a pointer on it. Oh. Well, if you focus on the bottom part here, then I can write an article that says that the public sector pays more than private sector. If I focus on the top, I can write an article that says private sector pays more, and then there's a lot of depends on the job in the middle. You know, nurses are going to be paid more in the private sector. Accounting jobs probably are going to be paid more in the public sector, but if you look at just CPA firms, that might be different. So it really does depend on the job. So it's just a caution that while we can use the data, we don't want to overemphasize it, because it's not going to really be as comparable as the jobs that we're looking at elsewhere. So as I said, we're using the Economic Research Institute as the source of data. It's a line item in our data sheets, and we're using as many jobs that we can find match up in terms of the duties and qualifications based on the information that they have. And I would call it more of a macro level assessment, meaning we can look at it. It's an item to look at to see, how the rest of our data compares to, but it's not something that we're overly emphasizing in terms of approaching salary setting for this organization. One other thing that I wanted to give you, because this data here does not include any benefits, it gives us bonus and some other types of information, but it doesn't give us health insurance or those things. U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics has actually been pretty good about publishing an annual survey that gives us a little bit of information in terms of private versus state and local government. The only caution is state and local government actually includes a lot of schools. It's not the case here in California, but if you go back east or in the Midwest, local governments often are the branch of government that oversee and run the school. So there's teacher data that's in there. And teachers, for a variety of reasons, can create some interesting issues in terms of comparisons to private sector. There aren't as many good comparisons. So this is data that was compiled in September 2013. And I just wanted to highlight a few things. This is basically a pie chart analysis, but you can see like supplemental pay, that would be bonuses things like sales incentives and those things. We would expect a difference because we don't have in public sector typically a profit and a sales-oriented model. And so you can see that's a difference where private industry is paying more percentage-wise. If this is a pie chart, that's a 2.7% of total compensation that they're paying in that category. If we go down to insurance, you can see it's no surprise that public sector is paying more. This is a reflection, in my opinion, after 25 years of public sector having much more union representation, and that becomes something that I think has an impact in terms of the insurance. It's certainly not because it's more expensive to provide it. It's simply a matter of what the employer is paying towards that benefit is higher, and it's much harder for agencies over time because of contracts and MOUs to be able to provide a more flexible model. We're seeing agencies do that, but now in terms of changing to like an 80% of this cost as opposed to a fixed cost or an escalator or a top amount. Another category that's not a surprise is that retirement benefits in the public sector are going to be more. Now I could go down to defined contribution. I didn't highlight it, but the defined contribution two lines down, you can see that's where there's going to be more. Defined benefit, big surprise, state and local government is much bigger there. And the legally required at the bottom is going to be things like Social Security and those differences are going to factor into that. The other thing I'll point out is that this is a pie chart. If you'd had $100,000 total package, $100,000 total package on either side, wages and salaries are going to be higher in the private sector, at least in this analysis. So they might, and we don't know what that bottom line is, whether or not that private industry and public sector, what those differences are. Like I said in the prior chart, it depends on the job and the industry that you're looking at. So we can look at this more from a pie perspective and see private sector versus state and local government. Yeah, there are differences. I don't know that I would say they're huge and significant. They're certainly in areas that we're aware of and that we've read a lot in the press in terms of the health and retirement.
How do these numbers compare with, say, 10 years ago in terms of the percentage of pay?
Yeah, they weren't doing this survey 10 years ago. So at least this kind of detail. In the 5 years that I've looked at it, we've seen health insurance benefits used to be a much bigger delta. So we've seen a closure in these categories. The differences between public sector and private sector used to be much greater with, I would say, 5 years ago, at least in the time period that they've collected this data. So the benefits that we're looking at, there's detailed data sheets, but just to kind of cover it, we're looking at the salary range. The focus point, it says top step base salary. I don't need to do a whole compensation 101 with you, but we're actually zeroing in on what's called the control point of your range. And for most public agencies, it's the top of the range because you actually have a fairly narrow window of pay progression. 5 steps, 6 steps, 20, 30%, that's actually a small window. Private sector will typically have 50 or 80% between in terms of a range spread. We look at cash benefits. There's still some retirement contribution that the employer is picking up for the employee, so we grab that where we can. Longevity, deferred comp, car allowance. Those are the kind of common cash benefits. And then insurance benefits, health, dental, vision, long-term disability, life insurance are the benefits we look at there. Now, we did also look at retirement contributions. It's not a benefit that we often actually number crunch, simply because it's hard to understand the value behind that. We can look at normal rates. We can look at different ways of looking at the employer rate, but it doesn't always mean that there's a better benefit being paid. It could be a reflection of the workforce demographics, whether they have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 tiers, You guys are in this business. You know it actually probably these actuarial numbers better than I do. But it's not a category. It's certainly a policy decision, but it's not a category that most employers will actually factor in terms of a total compensation model. Not saying that you can't, but it often isn't. And then in terms of the survey, we surveyed 26 job titles. What we essentially tried to do is avoid duplication. So if you have three levels of accountant, we only need to survey one level, kind of that journey core level, and the others can be related to that data point. We're looking at, as I said before, job descriptions, org charts, position control summaries, and ultimately from those 26, we want to draw down to what do we call benchmark classes, and those are job titles where we've got really solid data, they're anchor points in your pay plan, and that's where we want to actually look at setting your salary plan. So let me go into some graphics in terms of what our snapshots in terms of the survey results. This first one, if we just focus on base salary in the blue bar here, on average, all jobs, and I'll be careful because when I say on average, you had some jobs that were quite disparate from others, and we'll get to a chart later that shows that. But here we show an overall average, you're 4.9% below the marketplace if we're focusing on the median of the marketplace. If we add in cash benefits, you actually gain a little bit. So you go from being minus 4.9 to minus 3.6. Not a huge gain, but there's definitely something meaningful in terms of a difference that you have versus the market. And then if we look at insurances, that's where you make a fairly significant gain. So you have a health insurance package in terms of what the employer cost is that's quite a bit better than the marketplace. And so when you add all those together, you're going from almost 5% below market to being 0.5% above market.
Can I ask? Doug, I think it's important to note here, too, what dollar value you use for insurance. You use the most expensive family coverage.
That's correct.
And that's, I think, important to know as a part of this.
We use that consistently for all employers. So essentially what the maximum is that they would provide if there was family coverage to each of...
How recent is that figure?
Oh, this is...
Was it like a year ago or was it like 6 months ago?
Oh, no, December. So it was
real recent. Because there's been an increase in cost to the employee behind health care benefits that's occurred recently. Okay.
These are only employer costs that you're looking at, right?
Correct. Just the employer cost.
Would that be a decrease to employer?
I think it's also important to note that at one point in the process, you did include pension contributions in this, and that raised it up because our pension cost, at least, is much higher than the other systems that were in the survey.
That's correct. So, as I said, we did collect it. We analyzed it. And it becomes a policy decision by the organization in terms of, is that representing some value that you need to capture in this model? And I think a lot of employers say, well, the employee is not really seeing much in the way of that in terms of their, if you could dial it down into, we know this is because of a better benefit. In some cases there are, but to put that dollar value on it becomes a decision that you have to make in terms of how you want to capture that for salary setting purposes. So another way of looking at the data is this gives us more of a understanding in terms of the variability. So I'm going to lay in some blue bars here first and talk about how when we survey those 26 jobs, we've got three job titles that we found that were more than 20% below the median of the market. And then we had one job title that was 15 to 20% below, two job titles that were 10 to 15% below. You can see a big group here, 5 to 10% below, six jobs. And then four jobs that were 0 to 5% below. So ideally, if you're doing a survey and your objective is to get closer to market, and if we were only looking at base salary, you'd want to move these bars. If we have good data points and these are good benchmark jobs, we'd want to move those data points, those bars, closer to that black line in the middle. And then you had five jobs that were above from 0 to 5%, one job that was 5 to 10%, another job that was 10 to 15, and then I think you had one job that was more than 20%. So it's not exactly a bell curve because we have a little bit going on the left there, but ideally you would adjust the pay plan so that it kind of compresses it and you have a little bit more of a bell curve. It certainly do have a trend in the middle. So the vast majority of jobs are from minus 10% to plus 5% in terms of relationship to median. Now, if we add in cash benefits, insurance benefits, the whole thing, not surprisingly, shifts to the right because we're actually capturing some additional value. So this is just simply laying in what it looks like when you add benefits. And you can see there that you've got a little bit more of a bell curve. Again, you have some fringe things on the end there that we want to be concerned about, but that gives you a more complete picture in terms of some of the variability. The whole reason to do a survey is to not only understand where you are overall, but to find out where those pocket areas are, where the market has moved, and you need to adjust a job so that you can, again, get something that's closer to that black line in the middle.
You wanted to clarify something. So let's say employees get 3% at 50. Our cost is one thing. See, Alameda is different. So is it the employer paying towards that benefit or the benefit being received?
It's the employer paying towards that benefit.
But the pension costs are not in this.
They're correct. They're not in this. But that if we had in pension costs in this, that's what you said is accurate. This kind of gives you job titles. I know you're not going to be able to read this, but it's more just to show you, again, that variability in terms of base salary. And if we were to do, this didn't work. This is the 4.9% average.
I had a question, if you could go back, because I like, but the previous slide, they were positions, as is this, but
right.
Did all those numbers add up to the other? Is it the same?
It's just it's the exact same information, but now we're just showing it. We're not showing it in 0 to 5%. We're actually giving you detail in terms of what these percentages are.
And so when you get that negative 4.4 average, that's everybody, and it's
correct.
The average. Okay.
Right.
So overall, the organization is paying 4.4% less than the median of all those surveyed entities.
On base salary.
Base salary, just base.
On base salary, thank
you. Right. And if we look at it, here's with base plus cash plus insurance. And you can see that you're closer. It's like a minus, I don't remember what that number is.
Less than 1%.
Yeah. The last thing we did is we did a lot of math. It's in the detailed report. We actually adjusted for wage differences because what we had was, I showed you the chart earlier that showed all entities, but we realized that we've got sample size fluctuation, and so we wanted to be able to look at adjusting this data using the index so that if we had a sample that all the matches were in Kern, Fresno, Stockton, or lower cost of living areas, that we were able to capture that. And so because a lot of the agencies that are similar to you are outside of your region, or at least half of them, we wanted to make sure that we were not using a marketplace that was somehow disadvantaging you in terms of a very market that you compete in. So this is what it looks like if you do that. And this value, I do apologize for that not showing up.
4.2.
Is it 4.2?
Minus 4.2.
Yeah. So that would be the difference in terms of the marketplace. So this is really the number that we're using as we look at adjusting the pay plan, is to use these figures here because it captures everything. It gives us the, doesn't again include retirement, but it gives you base plus cash plus insurance, that function of benefits, and it adjusts for the cost of living differences. So as I said before, the only difference that was a real significant one was the insurance benefits compared to the marketplace.
You just said that last graph adjusted for cost of living differences, but
I'm sorry, wage differences, correct.
Yeah, you're not including cost of living differences here.
We're looking at cost of living, yes, it's not cost of living, you're right, it's wage differences. So in terms of what we do with this, and then I'll open up to your questions. As I said before, we want to identify benchmark jobs. We want those to be the anchor points in your pay plan, and then we want to build internal relationships and equity around that. And an example of that would be, you have an accounting series here, accounting technician, the specialist series, you have retirement accountant, supervising accountant, accounting manager. We can actually use four benchmarks of data. You can see as we lay that in there what that target rate is based on that ERI adjusted base plus cash plus insurance. And then we can build relationships plus minus 15% in terms of actually getting salary levels that are anchored in your pay plan. So you can see in this particular instance, most of the series, when we're looking at accounting technician data, you're right at market. So there wouldn't be a need to adjust that. The accounting specialists are related to that job. We also have accountant data that's telling us that you're pretty close to marketplace. So that series in this analysis is good. There's no adjustment that's required for those jobs. But we do have an issue where the supervising accountant and accounting manager have fallen further behind market, and so adjustments be for those job classifications. So we did that analysis basically for every job series, and that's the last chart in your report. So the last couple of pages is kind of where all this comes together into here's what we're recommending in terms of range adjustments, and then you adjust that into your pay schedule, and that would be the results of the study in terms of what pay changes would occur. Any questions?
Go back one slide, please.
Oh, yeah.
When you say set to market, that would assume that a policy of this organization might be that the market is equal to the median.
Correct.
It could be that the market, you could have a different policy.
Correct.
That suggests that you wanted to be 90%
correct
of market.
Correct. You could.
Like that, yeah.
Absolutely.
Because that's something I'm familiar with in
right
other organizations. They don't necessarily suggest that it has to be at market, but as long as they're close, that's okay.
Yeah, great point. Market position, I don't want to gloss over that too much. I think most public agencies, at a minimum, want to adopt something at the median. That's the 50th percentile. So if you can position yourself there, half the agencies pay above you, half below. You could do something like 75th percentile, which is going to put you at a more competitive position. Only a quarter of the agencies would pay more than you, and you'd pay above 75% of them. That's a more aggressive position. Obviously, that ties in with what do you need to do as a business in order to recruit and retain? What's the cost of doing that, sustaining that cost over time? Google can be at the 90th percentile because they have a lot of money to do it. And there's other entities, despite what they wish, don't have the budget capacity. You probably have, you know, somewhere in between in terms of what you need to do as an organization. I think the only other consideration I would say is that if I were to say, you know, stand up here and say you should pay at the 25th percentile, you as an organization would have to respond to your workforce and say, why are we only ranked at the 25th percentile? Why aren't we somewhere at the middle? And I think when you say we're going to pay at the 75th percentile, there might be another group of stakeholders that say, why do you need to pay that aggressively? So a lot of organizations, they end up defaulting to the 50th percentile because it kind of is a balance of that. You don't end up having to come up with criteria as to why that much higher or why that much lower. There may be good reasons to do that. I'm not suggesting there isn't, but I'm just saying this becomes the default of a lot of public entities.
Yeah, I guess just to follow up on that, in your travels, have you determined that default, as you've referred to it, reflects an adopted policy of those other entities, or is that just kind of how it turns out?
Well, it's a mix. I think a healthy organization adopts a policy, and they try and maintain that over time based on what the resources of the organization allow and what market conditions are and what they are as a player in the marketplace. So you're right. Sometimes negotiations, they could have a contract that uses CPI, and over time, CPI, for whatever reason, because it's not tracking with wages, pushes them outside or above. And that's why I think market surveys are important, is it because it gives you an opportunity to course correct. CPI, even though people use that as a proxy, if you were to set your pay on CPI over the last 10 years or the next 10 years, that would not be a policy that would reflect market rates. And so you might be shocked to find out you're not paying enough, or if you go back to the 80s, you're paying far more than what the market would require.
In your list at the beginning of the presentation of the sample group agencies that were shown next to the ERI index, of that list, how many of those have adopted policies with respect to salary as a percentage of market?
I think it depends on how we define policy, whether that's something that's been ratified at a board meeting or something that's a practice of the HR department. But I'm fairly confident that probably 40% of these would have a very clear policy. These agencies, this market position, these combination of benefits and base salary.
Yeah, and I guess I was asking the more formal question of agencies that haven't adopted written policy that's part of their policy manual or whatever, you know, wherever it might be.
Yeah, I can't quantify it here to say exactly who in this list is that. I'm just, based on my experience, I've worked with a number of these, and most of them have some policies in place.
Do you factor in like a shortage of a skill set? Like sometimes you hear there's a shortage of nurses.
Right. So if you have a shortage of nurses, it is going to push up the price and cost of acquiring that skill set in the marketplace. We can, you know, how quickly that happens and what industries it hits quicker than others and what marketplaces experience that. I know that I did a study for City of Portland many years ago, and when I was up in Portland, they had a surplus of nurses at a time in California where we had a big shortage. So you can have those kinds of differences Absolutely, we will see that in the market data. That's the whole reason you do these surveys, is to be able to pick up a value as to what the cost of that shortage is in terms of being able to chase after a low supply of the skill set.
Just to clarify the point I was making, on this adjust to market, I realized that a company or an organization could establish the 90th mm-hmm. as their policy or the 25th. But you could establish, there are lots of degrees of granularity in between. You could say that the organization wanted to have a policy of establishing 90% of the median.
Correct. Yes, you could.
Of the going rate, if you will.
Sure.
Okay.
You're using gross numbers on this, right? You ain't using net numbers on the sense of salaries and everything for benefits?
Yes, correct.
Everything is gross, it's not net.
Correct. What it is in the paycheck could be different.
Doug, in the slide, the last slide, you should, the
your experience may vary.
The one with the accounting classifications,
mm-hmm.
And as well as the other classifications in the full report, relative to market, what are you using as to those numbers? Not 90%, not 25%.
We're using the information that's showed in this chart right here. So we're basically using median, base plus cash plus insurance, and adjusting that using the ERI wage index.
Okay.
That number is what we're using to drive those benchmarks.
Okay.
So that creates a percentage deviation. We just convert that into, this is your market target to achieve that percentage deviation, and that's how we would end up aligning the pay plan.
Do you want the next
page? ask your question.
And Doug, in your report, in your final recommendations at the end, did you recommend median, or is it?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
The actual end recommendation is median.
Correct. Yes.
And that last slide that Brian was just talking about, where you just showed the accounting series, if you will, is that? I'm not finding that. Is that in here?
It should be the last two pages of the report.
The last two pages. So
it's actually the third to the last.
Oh, that's right. We have
Is it part C or is
no.
it before the appendices?
It's
right
it should be part C.
First page after the C break.
Right.
Right there.
Okay, that's what I wanted to know. So you're the accounting manager. So that's a snapshot of this.
Correct.
So when you're recommending there that other than the accounting manager and the supervising accountant, everything seems to be
In that series. Correct.
So I see. Okay, great. Thank you. So this is basically what we should be working off as we move forward in our decision-making process. So never mind. We'll have a conversation on that. Okay, thank you.
And Doug, the range control point, again, that would be the top of the range, that
Correct.
Range control point.
It's possible that some of these pay plans, I don't have the document in front of me, would have the way their pay plan would be displayed would show a series of steps, and then they'd have longevity steps that they show on top of that. Mm-hmm. And if they're really longevity steps, we're capturing that in the benefits analysis, but it's not part of the pay range.
Nanette had a question first.
Sorry.
Nanette. Then Lori.
Oh, thank you. I would like to clarify index that you're using, is it only one that all of the other indexes are rolled into to get one comprehensive index that is used?
No.
Or are you selecting from several different choices of indexes?
So, okay, sorry, I answered your question maybe too hastily. We are using one source. We're using the Economic Research Institute Wage Index. We are using that agency by agency. So if that index number for CalSTRS is different than for Kern or for Fresno, that's being applied to that data point. And if you look at the data sheets, we may have 8 matches in some data sheets. We may have 15 matches. We may have 6 matches. So for each one of those line items, we're doing that adjustment factor using the same figure for each entity. So for Fresno, it'd be the same adjustment figure for all 26 jobs for that line item where there's a match.
I understand that part. For example, there can be out there three different kinds of wage indexes. Some include energy and food. One does not. Yeah, the price indexes.
That's
okay.
Cost of living.
Yeah, so we're using a wage index, which so it's not the cost of living.
Okay, but may I please back up? I thought that you had said earlier on that with the my mistake. In the cost of living index, you have the housing, the rental, the cost of living, including food, energy, mm-hmm. blah blah, the whole thing.
Yes.
Is that in one index?
Yes.
And you are not choosing from, for example, six different indexes.
Correct.
Within that, it's just
one. One index. Yes.
Lori?
My question is, basically the bottom line to me is on page 14, is that the rank and file, we're paid what we should be paid, but management is paid way below. I mean, that's basically what page 14 says. Am I understanding that properly?
I think that's an acceptable statement, yes. with a couple differences, yes.
And that's without including the indexes that you just mentioned.
Okay.
I have a question, and it was brought up by one of the board members. The insurance benefits, the rates for our health insurance were based on last year's figures. If they would have stayed the same for this year, these numbers would be valid. But they have increased. The family rate for a private health net is for the county what they're paying is $1,500 that's stated here. I would be paying the equal amount if I wanted to keep that same health benefit. So it's basically, to me, it seems like it's a wash. If I'm paying $1,500 out of pocket and the county's paying $1,500 out of, as a benefit, it's, to me, it doesn't sound like a benefit.
Can I, David, it's important to remember that this study only took employer costs, only took employers, so there was no analysis done on the employee costs in this report.
That's what I'm getting at.
Okay. Well, and there may be choices. A lot of these agencies may have choices of Kaiser, Health Net, Blue Cross, Blue Shield.
But you took the top one. You took the top one, which would be Health Net.
Okay. Well, we took the, a small caveat, we took the top one excluding a plan that would have that type of cost to employ. We would not choose a plan. So it's the maximum of kind of the most commonly used plan. So let's say, for example, that an agency would pay up to $1,500, and the employee cost is $200, $300, $500. That's a plan we would choose. If there was employee cost of $1,500 or $1,800, that's not a plan we would choose, and there's probably very few, if any, employees that are in that plan.
Right, but you said it yourself. You choose a plan where the employee would pay $200 or $300. That was what I was paying 8 years ago, and it's gone up double and almost triple.
Right. So again, what we're looking at is that we recognize that employees will make some choices in there, and most employees are shifting to, if it becomes a high cost out of their pocket, they're going to shift to a plan that the organization offers that lessens that cost. We're not doing that kind of qualitative analysis, so we're simply looking at what that maximum contribution is, absent that rare instance where the plan cost is exorbitant and the employee cost is exorbitant. We're going to adjust and make sure we're doing something more common like a Blue Shield, a Kaiser, or one of those plans, because that's often what are being used as base rating comparisons for these agencies and surveys.
I think Jessica was first.
I'm sorry.
And I think you kind of hit on all of that, but just to reiterate, the benefits that, by choosing the highest benefit, which is probably the most unpopular benefit in terms of the county, and I understand that that was beyond the scope of your survey, because you have to pick a number and then go across with all the other counties, and there's no way probably to even quantify with all the different counties who actually chooses the highest costing benefit for the county. But I think what David's trying to say is it's unfair, because it's looking at a number that's much more inflated than what the county actually is going to pay out per employee. And it's the same thing with the cash, because some of the cash costs are assuming that people are paying into, like, the deferred comp. And not every employee pays into that plan, so then it's a cost that the county is not really incurring for employee.
And all I can say is it's the same rule for every other agency in the survey. And so if we were to change the rule in terms of how we apply the data here, we would do it there. It, in my experience, is not going to make a huge difference because it's the same kind of census, kind of granular stuff that we're not really grabbing as part of the analysis.
Okay. My question is, when you refer to cash payments in your summary, I saw car allowance up there and also insurance. And maybe I'm mistaken, but those are basically management, I think, perks or what have you.
Correct.
So it appears to me the rank and file don't get those benefits. At least most of us don't.
Car allowance,
so,
yes.
So when you added those in, it seemed to widen the gap on who's underpaid and overpaid or whatever, how this works. So I just wanted to point that out. Maybe I'm mistaken on that, but is that fair to assume?
There's not a... If you look at the management jobs and non-management jobs, the difference between adding cash or not having cash in there, there's not a huge difference in those impacts. So it's not a situation where everybody's got a car allowance, and by including it, we're, you know, providing some greater benefit or increase to the management jobs.
Vicki?
I have several questions. Number one, earlier in your report, you state that the objective is to have a sufficient range of comparable agencies to get at least six comparable job matches, and if not, further analysis would be done to ensure that there wasn't any skewing. I noticed that for several positions, there was a small sample of comparisons, like just three comps, which had more influence on the median, high or low, depending on the position. How would you recommend increasing the sample size so that the medium isn't skewed one way or the other?
Yeah, I think on those jobs, it's a question of whether or not that, I mean, how unique it is. You can certainly expand the set of agencies, but there becomes this this point where chasing that additional data doesn't really gain anything in terms of value. So what you're better off doing is that's why we have this benchmarking analysis. So we attempt to collect data for as many jobs. If we have a small sample set of three matches, unless it's a really unique market, then we're not going to use that data. We're going to rely on some sort of internal relationship adjustment or comparison for that job. So it doesn't, you don't need data points for every single job. You just need for enough that you can be able to build the pay plan around those anchor points or data points from the market.
Doug, I'll get right back. Just looking at this, the accounting specialist two, should that internal alignment salary setting rationale, should that be the approximately 5% above accounting technician, should that description actually apply to accounting specialist one? Because you're going, see what I mean, and then for
and then 5%.
Well, it's kind of a reflection of your current structure there. So you pay your accounting specialist one below your accounting technician. So the question becomes: does a entry level accounting specialist one, you know, what's it in terms of independent skill set responsibility? There's obviously a bridging there going around it.
Obviously, I wasn't looking at the dollar amount. I was looking at the way they were. Aligned on the left-hand side. I assume technician was below specialist one. As that was a mistake.
It's kind of between.
Okay, sorry, Vicki.
Along the same lines here with this accounting specialist position, you state under the salary recommendations on page 13 that it should be noted you have these two classifications that are flexible staffed structure, and therefore these positions need to be studied further through a job classification study to make sure that the complexity and nature of the duties are accurately reflected in our classification plan. How do you think this additional study would affect the salaries of this position?
Yeah, I actually can't answer that. I think that's why we called it out as something that would require further review. Here's the one way of looking at that. I'm not saying that this is the result of the analysis. I'm just saying it's one of the reasons that you might need to look at that. We're anchoring the pay plan, and we're looking at market data, looking at that accounting specialist too as kind of your core journey level. When you have a 1, 2, 3 and you had 10 positions, you would typically have fewer at the 3 level than the 2 level. In this instance, you have a mechanism where everybody gets to that three level. So it's actually positioning your salary higher than what the data shows. People here earn more because they can go all the way to that third level than what we're showing in our data analysis. So we're not second guessing the classification structure. That wasn't what this study was designed to do. But because we were trying to make sure we did an apples to apples comparison and we're seeing what's in the job description versus what reality is in terms of the way the positions are staffed, we just called that out as something that may require further review. And then in future surveys, you may get a better idea of how that accounting specialist series compares to the outside marketplace. In accounting, it becomes you have payables, receivables, payroll, and then your professional general ledger, financial reporting types of roles. There's a little bit of variation in between, but most organizations wouldn't have this many levels. So it becomes a question that I have in terms of what's going on as to why there's all those levels that are occurring. We did our best estimate in terms of job description comparing to the market, and I think to kind of the benefit of the doubt that it's the accounting specialist too that's kind of that core level. But I think a job analysis of that series would probably be far more illuminating for future surveys in terms of how to best compare that and maybe improve the number of data points we have for the accounting specialist.
You state on page 9 that there was insufficient data found in the market for the accounting specialist 2 position.
Correct.
And I find that surprising that there wasn't enough information for comparison. The duties of this position is typical function in the accounting departments of similar scores. Do you think there's a justification to go outside the public entities, perhaps, and find a larger sample size for comparisons?
Well, I think that's the kind of fundamentally the question is, are these duties that are in other agencies being performed by people at the accounting technician level or an accounting clerk level?
Accountant.
Yes, fair enough. Yes.
That's what I think it is. I mean, they're doing reconciliation work. I'm the accounting manager, so I see the work that they do.
Okay. Well, I think what's important to point out, I guess, is that when you're looking at jobs like this, one of the things that derives the value of an accountant is your requirement for a 4-year degree and X number of years of experience. If the accounting specialist does not require a degree, then irrespective of what their duties are, there's going to be a difference there. And its market difference is going to be 10 to 15%. Your accounting specialist 3, I think, is inside of that. So it's right around 10%. A little bit less than that. So I don't know that's far off what it ought to be when you look at that qualification difference. And I think that's where we had a lot of questions is, why are you having accounting specialists do this work? Because we're seeing the marketplace be more definitive. It's either accountants or it's technicians or clerks. And how do we best fit that series in? And it became something where it's a classification issue more than anything. And that's why we identified it as such.
Question?
I have two. And I apologize in advance if I'm wrong. But do I understand that you basically just said that if you have a college degree, that you're more valuable than someone who doesn't? That's basically what I heard.
In the accounting profession, the market values a degree more than a non-degreed position. I'm not saying I value it. I'm just saying that's the market.
Right.
Right. Within the same discipline, let's be clear, because we're not talking about IT versus library versus engineering. We're talking about within the accounting realm. Now, there may be a gray overlap. I'm certainly not suggesting that you can't have an expert technician that is above and beyond some of the professional level duties. There could be that type of overlap. But when you're looking at the qualifications, the market will value an accountant with a degree requirement more than a specialist or technician that is more of a paraprofessional that requires an AA or something less than a bachelor's.
Obvious. My other question is that if management is underpaid here, then the board has the ability to go in and just say, well, we're going to pay them 90% of the median and up their salary. Is that correct?
Not this time.
The only person we have the ultimate say on is the CEO.
Is Marilyn. Okay. So,
Let Brian respond.
What these are basically equity type adjustments that the board has power to make over all of staff. Is my understanding.
We can make recommendations to the county.
With regards to this. Ultimately, we currently do have authority over unrepresented staff in our pending agreement with the county.
My point is that the retirement office used to be the cream of the crop. It was the place to be because, contrary to what some people believe, you can't just pull someone off the street and teach them what we know because we all have a specialized thing, every one of us in here. And so I guess my question is that, looking at what Jess Company has given you, if you say, okay, we want to pay our staff a little bit more because they do a great job, they know their stuff, they're more responsible than a hairdresser, let's say, do you have that ability to do that?
For unrepresented staff, right now we don't have that direct ability.
Okay.
We have pending legislation that would give us that direct ability, which we hope will pass, and then we can treat everyone the same. Right now, for represented staff, you're still considered county employees. All we can do is make requests or recommendations to county HR to, in negotiations, make those adjustments. So.
So is that your intent to make recommendations to the county for the represented employees on the current negotiations that we're having? Is that your intent currently?
I believe that's the board's intent, based on the study and any tweaking or adjustments that we might want to make as a result of good questions that have been presented here as far as additional information to be gathered or...
But it's too early to say there would absolutely be recommendations.
Well, that's true. I mean, the board
until
would have
we
to...
do the other.
I mean, there are just some things that have to happen before, but I think the purpose for us to do this study is to bring everybody up to their proper compensation level.
Okay.
So.
Thank you.
Annette?
I'm glad that you have that particular accounting slide up there. Because I would like to clarify just a couple of things. This flexible range for the accounting specialist 1, 2, and 3, also for counselor 1, 2, and 3, are not automatic flex-up positions in their original design. In order to move between the three classifications, there were additional education and course requirements, increase in responsibility. So it's not an automatic flex up in those two flexible series. That series has been in place for years. Later it came on to be your retirement accounting technician is not part of that flexible class. It came to be that they wanted a position that would not flex up, would need to be, if they wanted to move up, they would need to apply when job openings became available. Contrary to the county's classifications, the retirement accounting technician is not the top level of these, all of these positions. It is right above entry level. In the county, they will do account clerk 1, 2, 3 and accounting technician. And we have issues with this with county HR all the time, with job specs. This does not directly correlate to that. What else I would like to mention about that, as Vicki mentioned, the accounting functions are functions that are done, I believe, in every single pension system that exists. The accounting specialist 3 are actually performing job equivalents of the accountant level series, right here across the board, pretty much. So I think that's something I would really request that the board look into and take into consideration for a possible reclassification there. I'm also going to point out that County of Alameda and other counties, and actually even in Contra Costa County, will take the substitution of having performed these duties very competently and successfully. They will take a year's substitution of years of this performance for a BA degree. I just wanted to point that out. And I also noticed when I went through this survey, The retirement accounting specialist series, in here you state that it would be compared at the level, at the level three in the survey comparison. And you have established, or this study has established, a benchmark on the specialist two. And then you've done 15% increments above and below that. I also noticed that there is nothing reflected in this entire study except on your last, your recommendation, proposed recommendations that include anything about the level three for accounting specialists or the counselor series, and also the senior, senior member services data specialist, which is also an equivalent level to the three levels up there. And there's no reference in here of saying that the job specs were even reviewed. Also, it says in here that you would be reviewing your firm duty to duty and not title to title. Well,
that requires a desk audit.
Sorry, that just went out of my head. Maybe I could pick that up a little bit later.
Yeah, if I can just respond to the three-level issue. As I said, if we were to look at all these entities and we did document every single accounting level position they had from the lowest level up through the professional level, so we have that documentation, there simply isn't an accounting specialist three type of job out there. It's either going to be performed by some mix of an accountant type of job, which we already have a data point for and we're using. Yeah, or it's going to be performed by a lower level classification. So, but more importantly, that even the difference between the one, two, and the three, we just simply chose the two level, I think to your benefit, as the one to look at in terms of the marketplace. Simply because if we're going to have those different levels, we wanted to rely on that level, recognizing what some of the job description elements were as to what goes to the three level. So it's not ignoring the job, it's just recognizing that to get data points in an accounting series, we're not going to get all those different levels. And underlying your question is, it is a classification issue. So if you are doing duties that everyone else in the world has an accountant do, that's something that would be need to be looked at. It can't be solved by the market analysis because we have an accountant job with more similarity in terms of the full range of duties, the qualification requirements. It's more of an apples to apples comparison. And setting aside the equivalency of years of experience and that type of language that's in job descriptions, there's still a difference, a line that you cut between a professional level accountant and a paraprofessional level of accounting position. So I'm not going to disagree with anything you said, which is why we said this needs some more study, because we realize that this is imperfect data below the accountant level, maybe even at the accountant level, just because of the levels and the nature of work you do. Obviously, we're looking at other retirement associations, so we're not mixing in and looking at city and account a county type of data points. So to the degree you're performing functions that are unique to a retirement entity, this should pick that up, and we should be able to get at that as we do that analysis.
I would like to request that the board look into these classifications more specifically for reclassification to activities performed. We would appreciate that.
And then I think your first comment was that our dealings with county HR kind of caused these problems, and that we had to deal with them and try to fit our staff into classifications that they had, and so historically we've had issues, so we will deal with those issues.
Thank you.
Right, because we do have one of our I'm an accountant as well. I'm a supervising accountant, so one of our specialist three actually qualified, qualified for the MQ for the retirement accountant position. But initially, county HR did not allow him to test because his title is a specialist three. So he needed basically a verification from Christina and Marilyn for him to say, no, he does perform account work. So that's the only way that he was able to qualify for the test. otherwise, with his title, he couldn't because of not necessarily what his job description or job responsibilities are.
Okay. Karen, and then...
Just a question. I see this as a presentation. I don't know if we're accepting it, but I did want to get to the issues. Obviously, employees have grave concerns, but they're not about the market. It's about classifications, which are labor issues and how we, you know, people have been classified, whether they should be classified. So I'm asking and looking, are we taking action today? I don't think we are, but we are perhaps going to be giving direction about next steps so that employees are aware of how this study will be utilized as we move forward. Because I think there's valid concerns, but I'm not sure this is the place to be voicing those concerns until we know what direction we're going to be going in and how we're going to be dealing with this information. And I think it would be helpful to share how we plan on dealing with this information.
I think today is basically to present the study to all staff. And staff knows what they do and what their duties are better than certainly on the board here. I was over Christmas break helping my son with his intro accounting class for his final, and I realize how little I remember about accounting from college. So I appreciate what all the accounting department does, what benefits does.
But we've got other positions.
And all of these other departments that I personally, and I apologize for not knowing more about specifically what everybody does. We rely on Marilyn and the department or unit heads to keep us apprised. And when this board, hopefully when this board becomes the governing body of, or the employer of all staff, we will get more involved in obviously reviewing classifications, job duties, and all of that. So right today, we're just kind of gathering information, so.
But I do think we need to give direction.
We will.
Okay.
I just heard something said about other departments. Do we need to be concerned about other departments?
No, well, other positions in the study, not just accounting, but
right.
There's other positions here, and so we need to come up with a decision about how we're going to be moving forward. That
I just want to make sure we were all talking about the retirement staff and not outside.
No, just retirement.
Just retirement.
Right.
Tim,
that
one too.
Where's Tim?
He's right.
Oh, there you are.
I did have a question about defining the marketplace here. You're doing the survey of a lot of our peer systems up and down the state. But I think part and parcel of the recommendation is that the market is efficient and priced correctly, and we need to be adjusting to that. I understand you can only work with the data that you collect, but from a policy standpoint, if we know that other counties are looking to adjust their pay scales are not at market, at what point do you take a look at that and say, we understand this is the marketplace today? We understand there's discussions that there will be systems that they know that they believe that they are not at market and looking to adjust upwards and perhaps do a study after we do our study. And it becomes, you know, a feedback loop there, but how does that feedback loop get taken into account when you're trying to set a policy?
So a market survey is always a snapshot. You know, so that's a given. We took this snapshot in the kind of the late fall, early winter, so November, December. Is our snapshot. There were some changes that probably happened January 1, particularly within the health rates that employers are paying. There's probably going to be another big market change in July. That's typically when fiscal years will change. So you take a snapshot, and then there's a secondary decision that the organization has to have in terms of how you position yourself relative to that. It's this whole idea of lagging the market or leading the market. I think most organizations, if you were using this data, your decision would be to implement it in this fiscal year in whatever fashion, and then knowing that July 1 there'll be some other market changes. And whether you do another update of the survey or you do a proxy, I recognize what you're saying, but absent what you measure in the market, there is no other standard to look at. There's no czar of compensation. There's no other indicator. And yes, some of these agencies may not be doing a salary survey. Maybe some of them did them 2 years ago, some are doing next year, 2 months from now. That is the given market. And a snapshot is only going to give you the information that exists at that point in time.
Well, have you seen other systems take a look at this and say, we understand that the market is dynamic, our wage setting policy is not necessarily as dynamic as the market. We know it's going to take time to phase it in. and we revisit this every 3 years. Do systems like that say median, therefore it's going to be a lagging indicator, and we go above that?
Some do, yes.
Now, again, these salary ranges don't take into account cost of living increases going forward, which are negotiated for the represented people. That's all on top of any of these salary ranges. So just to let you know, this isn't the be all and end all. So
it just gives us an idea where we are in the marketplace, and we'll have to be vigilant and aware as we move forward, not only in setting policy, but in setting salary ranges. You know, this gives us a base point or a jumping off point, if you will, and then we move forward in how, I mean, that's how I see it, how we are going to address inequities, and whether that's marketplace or classification, how we move forward.
Picking.
My last question. Can you please explain how you determine for some positions an internal alignment salary setting rationale of quote-unquote benchmark set to market versus same as XYZ position? Based on our alignment of responsibility to the positions that report to the division managers, so I've talked about the supervising accountant and the benefits coordinator, wouldn't it make sense to use the same methodology to determine salary levels for both of these positions based on the salary recommendations of the manager positions?
Two comments to that. One is, we would like to layer in as many benchmarks as possible. And typically, as a starting point, if it's let's just say this is an evolving document, it becomes public, there's reaction and feedback, and based on that feedback, there's improvements to it. We would want to start with as much market data, good market data as possible, correcting for, looking at, making sure there's no salary compaction between a supervisor and subordinate. We also recognize that underlying this, even though we're not involved in this, are represented positions and unrepresented positions. We don't want unrepresented positions wholesale to be driven off of represented jobs. And that's not a best practice in terms of how you would set up a pay plan. So that means that we're going to rely on benchmarks. We're going to look at, make sure that there's no resulting salary compaction that exists between those management jobs and the subordinate positions. But we're not going to drive represented off of management, and we're not going to drive management off of the represented positions. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, because right now the recommendation is for the supervising accountant that steps into my position when I'm not around, making less than the benefits coordinator who reports to that manager. And I think my salaries may be just a little bit higher than the benefits manager. So to me, I would think that those positions would correlate the same way.
So what you're talking about is when we have different disciplines and functions and we're relying on market data, there's always the consideration you have to look at once this analysis is done is to do this more horizontal view. And so that would be something, if I was CEO, for example, I might look at it and say, okay, how do my department heads or my division heads or my next reports layer in? And do those market values reflect the way I manage my team and the way their role and responsibility is reflected within the organization? There's always the ability to build in equity on top of those market levels. And I would just simply suggest that level of feedback hasn't really been a discussion point and often isn't until it's a public document and people can kind of weigh in and give their input on those sorts of things. And I would say if market data is close, absolutely, that's a reasonable decision. Now, if market says these two disciplines are 15% apart, it's a harder decision because do you pay this one less and this one more and potentially sacrifice a market position value for that, or do you roll high? Those are kind of policy considerations you have to look at as part of that. I would just emphasize that when a document becomes public and the, kind of the discussion that we have here, I would expect that those kinds of questions, to the degree that the board and Marilyn would like a response from me, I'm happy to do that. And whether that means there's a change or more clarification as to why we're recommending what we're recommending, I'd be happy to do that.
And that position, from what I'm seeing, was not reviewed, and we're just wondering.
Well, it was reviewed. You have to think of the, you have the member services data specialist and senior level. Those two are tied as a unit, as a classification structure. If we look at the job descriptions and we look at what their duties and responsibilities are and what the description denotes as the difference in terms of that series. Again, we're not doing a classification study. So it may be that a classification study would say, this is really a widget A and a widget C, not a widget A and a senior widget A. So there are some issues that we're not going to get at in this type of analysis. But we're looking at that series and we're using that member services data specialist as the benchmark. Again, we're looking at other levels in the marketplace, but not every agency is going to have that senior level comparable in the marketplace, either because of their size or the way they distribute those particular duties. It's not a disadvantage to not be surveyed. So there's been two comments now about my position wasn't studied. That's not the case. It may not have been surveyed because there's not data points in the market available to be able to look at for that job level, but it certainly is in terms of its relationship to the job within that classification series.
So were our specific job duties reviewed or just our title? Because like what we do in our position ties into, you know, accounting and IT and different things that we're working with everybody, but it's not necessarily listed in the job. Well, we added it to our job description when we were all asked to display what we do. And I'm just wondering, were those reviewed or was it just our title?
No, those were reviewed. But there's still a judgment as to whether or not that hybrid or whatever that role and responsibility you have exists in the same combination of qualifications, duties, responsibilities in these other entities. And it may not be. It may be that you have fashioned a classification here that works best for this organization that's just not found. It may be that it's maybe two different jobs that are in the marketplace. But in this case, it's two things going on. It's that and the fact that you have two levels, and we're simply using the lower level, the non-senior level, as our way of getting at that data in the marketplace. And if the senior, if you're suggesting, is not in any way, shape, or form related to the non-senior, then that would be, again, a classification structure issue that would have to be looked at.
I just wanted to point out that earlier you mentioned that you realized that healthcare costs have gone up, but the healthcare costs that went up didn't affect the county in any manner at all. It was all absorbed by the employees. So that change that happened in the healthcare costs rising didn't affect the county.
And the same may be true for these other entities. The same would hold true for these other entities in some cases.
No. In some cases. So
we don't know how many cases, but
yeah. But I mean, all the other entities that you compared us to, if their healthcare costs, I'm sure, rose, then maybe, you know, did the majority of them actually, the county or those entities contribute, like our county used to, half of the increase and the employee contributed the other half. So then that would throw off the skew of what happened prior to when this study was first done.
Yeah, I'd be happy to update our numbers to post January 1.
But okay, I want to be real clear here. If the county's contribution stays the same, that's captured. And if some other organization pays more, that's captured. So then when you do your comparison analysis, it would show we would be below because they would be higher. So that is captured in this. Let's just say this is and I see your slide says 11.4, so let's assume December of, you know, 31st, before the healthcare costs went in. Let's say January 1, if nobody, they would, county or retirement system A and Sisera, because of the current structure of how Sisera employees represented are not, they're paying a bigger burden. These are all employer costs. So if the employer's paying $100 into healthcare and Alameda County, let's just say, is paying $200 in, you captured that information and it would show that Alameda has a higher compensation package, correct?
We did.
Okay, so recognizing that employees today are paying more towards their healthcare than they were 3 months ago, it's still captured because another employer may pay more than the county does, and so that we're still comparing. I'm going to call it apples to apples because they pay a higher, another entity pays a higher compensation than we did. Now, what your take home is less, but it's this is all the market and what the employer pays. So while this is a big concern, and I hear it, it doesn't impact the information you're giving us.
Well, it might here just in one instance.
Okay.
It depends on what's driving those rates. So if your rate was 1,500,
okay,
and it's I'm using round numbers here. If Sicera's rate was 1,500 and January 1 health insurance costs went up, but that 1,500 is a hard cap, and so the employee is making up that difference.
Right.
It could be that another employer has a different way of doing it, where they're at, we're going to pay 80% of this rate. And so when the rate goes up January 1, the employer rate goes up a little bit, as does the employee.
And that's my point, is that you captured that the other employers are paying, their compensation package is better than Sicera's rate. Because they don't have that cap, and the share, what they were paying before, they're continuing to pay, whereas here at Sicera, we're not. So,
yeah, it just, if you have a hard cap and they don't, they could have had a change January 1 is all I'm saying.
So we could update
I'm
those.
Going back to just to say December 31st.
Yeah.
It's still the same.
We are capturing it then. Right.
Yeah. And so I recognize the take home is different, but the employer's
right
market rate, you're still capturing that Sicera employees are not getting as compensated on their health care as others may be, because in those other entities, they have a different pay policy or compensation policy. You've captured that information.
We did.
Okay.
Yeah. I think the basic employee question on this is a snapshot. You're describing a snapshot as of 11-4. They're describing an increase that took place after 11-4.
But right. It's still captured.
It would be captured at the next snapshot, but right. On this one, it would not be.
Correct.
Yeah.
Well, I'm sorry. Yeah, the issue is not necessarily the increase in healthcare costs. It's a question of how much is the employer paying, the total dollar amount that the employer is paying, and for all of us here, the employer is paying zero of that increase. So their dollar, and the only thing that these numbers are looking at is what the employer is paying. So we're not adjusting any of these rates for the increased cost of health care for the employee. We're just looking at what the employer is paying. And if our employer is paying, as Karen pointed out, a fixed dollar amount, and let's say San Mateo County is paying a higher dollar amount, then that's going to increase the differential between
the delta would be greater.
San Mateo and Contra Costa County. So it's actually a benefit salary-wise for our employees that there's a bigger difference between comparing employers.
And I realize that he was that is what's happening.
Yeah.
But he mentioned that, you know, that we had changes, that our health insurance went up this year and that the county absorbed more. Well, that was after the fact. And I realized that when he did that, it was apples to apples, what was going on with us and what was going on with the other counties.
So the other and you're right, because rates generally go up, or health care rates generally go up as of the 1st of January, for at least
right.
for us and probably for a lot of other counties.
Right.
So, and these numbers are based on numbers on rates prior to, or what?
To it happen. Yes.
The beginning of January, so we can certainly update these numbers.
And that's what I mean. I understand that, but I was just commenting on his comment that,
right.
that our county was paying more when really they didn't pay more. I don't know what the other counties did, but
right.
ours didn't, and that's
right.
all I was commenting
right.
on.
Well, can we bring this back to discussion about where we're going to go on
yes.
this?
Yes.
Brian, I have one comment.
Sure.
I sense the frustration by the board and probably my staff as well. I personally just want to say thank you for allowing us to come in here and ask the questions to both you and or Brian and Marilyn, of course. But I think the frustration is also coming from, bottom line is, there's this compensation study, it's not a classification, it's compensation. It's basically saying the rank and file is paid fine and that management is underpaid. That's a frustration for us, personally. And so it's hard to swallow when we do have specialized fields. We do work really hard for the board, for all the retirees, you know, the actives. So it's just a little hard to swallow when we see that in writing. that work fine, and I'm not blaming you.
No, I'm just saying, but it may not be, I don't know that I would describe it that way. What I would describe is over the last 5 years, represented employees have gotten more increases relative to what's happening in the market compared to management. So it's not uncommon, for example, for agencies to have a situation where represented employees are in MOUs and there's agreements and locked-in changes, and management takes the hit when you have budget issues of no increases, no increases. So it's just as feasible that that happened to some degree here. I don't know.
Not always that happens. Yeah. I'm just saying. And I understand and I know that this is not the place to take that up. So I'm just going to end my comments there, but it's just difficult. Thank
you. I'm wondering if you allow one more question. My colleague had pointed out.
Sure.
I just wanted to. Maybe you can clarify on your Exhibit A, you have member services technician, you have office specialist. You have, according to the medium, a 20.3%, it looks like overpaid, and then a minus 6.1%. And then in the back, on your recommendation, you recommend zero and zero, which I presume that's zero change.
Correct.
Is that why is that?
Well, you'd have to look at Exhibit C, simply because that's at least including in the salaries. Actually, you'd have to look at the chart on page, I guess if you're looking at the report, page 13 of the report, because Exhibit A is only looking at base salary. And so we were looking at base salary plus the benefits plus an adjustment factor for the wage index. So at least have that as a starting point. Now, if we want to look at some of these jobs, which are basically on page 13, if you look at that graph, or if I want to just go back here, if we look at these positions, arguably the bars that are above the line there are jobs that are overpaid. I'm going to use that word just purposely, that someone might say, well, don't you knock those down? Don't you slow the pay increases? Don't you do that? That's absolutely a policy decision of this organization. One way of doing that is to simply hold the job where it is and then reassess that market position when you look at it next time you do a survey. It certainly isn't do an increase, but whether or not you want to course correct by saying we're going to pull these jobs down is a matter of how you want to implement the results.
And I appreciate that, and I'm going to say something that the employees aren't going to like, but I think it has to be on the record. We asked you to do a comparable worth study, but I have a feeling that there was an expectation that everybody was going to get a raise out of this. And my expectation of a comparable worth study is to tell us where we are in the market so we as a board can now move forward and make some policy decisions on how we're going to address that. Personally, I'll state, I'm not looking to reduce anyone's salary. If they're above that line, that's fine. We have to determine how we're going to deal with those positions above the line. But personally, I'm not looking to bring anybody down to meet the market. I'm more concerned about those below the market, how we're going to address bringing them up to the market.
Harvey, did you have your hand up?
Just one quick question, Doug, if I may. If you were to limit your data, your comparable data, to Bay Area retirement systems, where realistically our retirement specialists would actually have an option without disrupting their lives to take another competitive job. Mm-hmm. Where would that, do you have a sense of where that data would take you?
I don't, and I would be careful to say that for some jobs, that would be, for the example you gave, that might be a very good optimization of the data, but it might be at the expense of losing data points for other jobs. So when we're setting up a marketplace, we're trying to capture as much data for all the jobs in the entity, and some jobs may not be found. So it's really a question of numbers. If we reduce it to an optimal 8 or 10 that are more barrier focused, what data points do we lose? What skewing ends up becoming a result of this? Obviously, the wage adjustment factor changes, and so you may not have an influence of that. So in this case, we've tried to do the best of both worlds, avail ourselves of more data and adjust the data for those wage differences that we know exist between a Fresno market and a Bay Area market.
And I think, Harvey, I'd answer that question to you, that I think as we move forward and what our policy direction is, I'm thinking the same thing you are. What does the Bay Area, where do we are, you know, and that'll go into a consideration. Not on classification. I think we need some classification work done here. It's obvious. But when it comes to pay, we make that direction known. I don't you know, we'll have to have that conversation.
Louis?
You mentioned the medium earlier, to stay in the 50 percentile versus, say, 75 percentile. Where are you comparing that on? Mm-hmm. On looking at the other agencies? Are you looking at retention? Are you looking at areas?
No, all we're doing...
What about the 50%?
Well, all we're doing is doing a calculation of base salary plus benefits, and then we're ranking the agencies highest to lowest, and that data point is what we're grabbing. So all it is a mathematical statistical calculation of kind of capturing what that rank of agencies are. We're not doing any more assessment than that in terms of the...
So you're saying 50% would be the best place to be versus, say, 75%?
It just depends on your policy objectives. I think I suggested that it's a common market target labor position for public agencies because it's that 50-50 scenario. You could certainly do more. You could do less if you...
But I just look at your retention and
right.
And the, I mean, area, that's, like Harvey says. I mean, you look at the surrounding areas.
Right. But I guess I would pose the question this way. Do you have... high turnover rates? Do you have difficulty recruiting positions? If 50th percentile is your market position, and the answer to that is no, you have no difficulty, that you're able to hire people and you don't have huge turnover issues, then those two are telling you that there's not any, at least something fundamentally out of balance in your pay plan, because the primary basis of the pay plan is to be able to recruit and retain staff. I realize that it gets into people's assessment of fairness and equity and those things, which is a secondary aspect, but the primary purpose of your pay plan is recruitment and retention. And this measurement gives us a way of being able to position you, or you positioning yourselves, so that you hopefully don't have those kinds of issues.
Okay. Brian, yeah. I know that the board is going to...
Last question. last comment.
Yeah. I understand that this study was also done as a matter of see where we are for attraction and retention. And just to follow what you just said, for years we had almost no turnover in this office. But I can tell you within the last year to two, we have lost people to City of San Francisco, San Mateo County, City of Pittsburgh, Central Sanitary, and to other departments within this county. And so, I just wanted you to know that in case you
thank you.
Want to consider that.
Okay. Doug, thank you very much, and staff, thank you very much for your thoughtful comments.
Thank you.
What's going to happen now is we're going to take all, there's a subcommittee of the board, a compensation subcommittee. We're going to take all this information back, and we're going to discuss it some more, and then we'll come back to the full board, and we'll see what we can work out. So,
With some recommendations,
and again, we're dealing with, we have to deal separately with represented and unrepresented as far as what this board's direct authority is. Hopefully, next year we won't have to deal that way, and we'll be the employer for all the staff, and that's what this board is looking forward to. So thank you very much.
Yeah, appreciate it.
Thank you.
We'll take about a 10-minute break, and then we'll come back and deal with the Google Sands issue. And,